Good morning! This is John Jackson Miller, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for December 10th, 2019. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Evergreen, the Christmas tree.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. You've been out and about. You've been seeing family, seeing the world, seeing colleges. How's it been, Chip?
Well, it's, I'm a Christmas tree. So, it's my season. I hang all sorts of ornaments around.
Yes.
And my wife, Holly, and I enjoy hanging out. And enjoying the season, Steve. And, maybe we'll get some snow. You never know. You never know.
I give up.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You and I both got a chance to see A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. This is the fictionalized story of Mr. Rogers and his influence that he had on not just one generation, but more like three generations of Americans.
And this story is based on how impacted a writer who certainly was kind of an investigative journalist, kind of a 60 Minutes type of guy for Esquire, which is a magazine for all of our listeners who don't know what those are, who basically was giving what he thought was going to be this little fluff piece to interview a hero, which is Mr. Rogers, and how Mr. Rogers helped, create new insights for him.
Changed his life, really.
Yeah.
Really, when it comes down to it. This is a beautiful story of how we can look at ourselves and figure out how to be the best people that we are. And it's so well framed here.
Absolutely.
It's not just the story of Fred Rogers, who was this amazing human being. It's the story of us seeing Mr. Rogers and being influenced by him.
In fact, you said bookends. In fact, the whole movie is a bookend. We start off where Mr. Rogers comes in like he would come in on any other children's program, taking off his jacket, putting on the sweater, putting on his sneakers, and then introduces us to this man who is a writer, who has been hit in the nose, bloody face, looks like he's got black eyes. And we're going to learn a little bit about this writer, about how he learns about Mr. Rogers and Mr. Rogers' gift to the world, basically, which is how to help articulate our relationship to our feelings and the emotions that we have. And so this idea that, it's wonderful to be happy, but it's also okay to be sad. And we all get mad, and the power of that is recognizing that these are human emotions, that we all experience those, and it's how we deal with those emotions that is the real trick to being like Mr. Rogers. And ultimately, I think what we're finding is this writer is uncovering that gift as Mr. Rogers helps him discover, the source of maybe his anger, maybe his feelings.
Honoring those feelings, seeing that I am angry, I am sad, honoring the fact that that is part of my human experience, and then finding the way to go on with the next step of it is what are you going to do with those feelings? It's not okay to take that anger and to use it against other people, but to take that anger and to change the way things work, that is such a powerful message.
And, it shows up in so many places in this movie. The writer, eventually, he's just trying to uncover it. Like, Mr. Rogers, we know he's a fraud. Let's figure out a way that he's a fraud.
There's so many of those stories in the history of Mr. Rogers. Everybody who saw this man said, there's got to be something. There's got to be a dark, some secret in this man. He can't be this genuine. But he really was.
Well, and the other part is that he wasn't perfect.
Right.
And that was Mr. Rogers' response. Every time he got hammered away by this truly gifted journalist, he would say, thanks for reminding me of that.
Mm-hmm.
And he would be quiet. And then he would say, you know what? You know, you're right. This, you know, what you pointed out is absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
And what it allowed Mr. Rogers to do is show how human he was. Like, his life wasn't perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he set up he surrounded with people who allowed him to show the best of what he could be. And, you know, he was able to show flaws. Mm-hmm. And he was able to come to terms with those. Where, you know, yes, I can get angry at times. And yes, my relationship with my son mm-hmm. wasn't the best it could be.
Right.
He goes, but I'm proud of him.
Yeah.
And yes, I couldn't get the tent to you know, I needed another person to help me. But that's okay. You know, adults fail.
That scene in this movie, knowing as much as I know about Mr. Rogers, as much as I've studied the skill of this man, as many books as I've read, I knew about that scene where he's trying desperately to put up a tent and he's failing at it. And his production crew says, oh, no, we can just do it again, Fred. Don't worry. We can make it look like you didn't struggle. And he said, no. I need to show the kids that are watching this show that sometimes adults struggle. The struggle is real.
Well, our journalist and his relationship with his wife is also very important.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot emphasize enough how much the book Hillbilly Elegy meant to me, because that gentleman who's a journalist was a brand new father. His wife had a wonderful job, and they were there's all the pressures of being a new parent, of trying to create the perfect family. But also coming to terms with all the challenges of being a spouse and a partner and the stresses of work and all that stuff going on around it. And, in Hillbilly Elegy, the wife turned to the husband and said, I'm not your enemy. I'm working with you. I'm your friend. I'm on your team.
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, she was doing the same thing to her husband. She was saying, listen, you don't have to be angry about this. Your life wasn't perfect. I know it wasn't perfect. But, you know, and you don't need to be perfect today. But what we can do is we can address the things the best we can. Mm-hmm. I think the ending worked out real well in this, because ultimately the challenges that our journalist was going through, Fred Rogers was able to really break this gentleman down as he moved his story from just being this little fluff piece to a full-blown article
mm-hmm.
that really explored how his life changed from being around Fred Rogers, which basically said, how did your life change?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how were you impacted by this gentleman?
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the theater. I had six women in front of me. They were all in their, they had to be in their 70s. They were all talking the whole time, but they certainly were there because Fred Rogers must have meant something to their children.
Mm-hmm.
And they were in the room when that was being played. And that it certainly was, this is a good movie. This is not a great film. This uh-huh. is not Picture of the Year. But if you're looking for a film about a person who is really, really good to try to emulate and understand, this is probably it.
A really good example. That's who Fred Rogers was. And this movie takes so many of those feelings of who Fred Rogers was and puts them on the screen. Mm-hmm. The pacing of this movie is very slow and deliberate.
Sure.
I could see how some people could see this as slow and boring
mm-hmm.
because the pace is so careful. That's something that Fred Rogers was so good at. He knew how to tell a story at the right pace.
And I'm going to touch on something that I was going to leave out, but I'm going to touch on it. There is a story about the journalist's father and the reason why the journalist had his nose punched.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the father did that. But the father did not mean to do that. The father ran out on the journalist very young at age.
Mm-hmm.
The journalist's mother had passed away. He was very angry about it. It probably propelled him to be very good at his investigative journalism.
Mm-hmm.
The father was at the end of his life. He was trying to make amends. He was trying to make up for all those years he wasn't there. And rightly so, the journalist was not receptive to that. But at some point, you recognize we're all human. Choices were put in front of us. And how you deal with that and the anger that the journalist was feeling all came back to that. And only by coming to terms with your feelings that make everything right. But what it did was allow the family to accept each other for who they are.
To go through a change.
Absolutely.
To go through a revolution on who they were, because they were open to the idea of changing their minds and hearing the words of Fred Rogers.
So if you don't see this film, Fred Rogers is a great person to study.
I have studied so much of Fred Rogers. I'm a big devotee of everything that he was able to do in education. I recommend all of the books that have been written about him. The Gavin Edwards book that we reviewed is a great place to start your study of how to be a better person. I really recommend the documentary.
Using the wisdom of Mr. Rogers. Rogers.
Correct.
All right.
I really recommend the documentary about Fred Rogers from last year. That was a great movie. This is a good movie. The one thing that I couldn't get past was the superstars of this movie.
Sure.
That was not Fred Rogers on that screen. That was Tom Hanks.
And that wasn't Forrest Gump? Because I saw Forrest Gump.
There was a little bit of a Forrest Gump element to the way that Tom Hanks was sharing the character of Fred Rogers on the screen. And I could never get past that. But I was okay with that because Tom Hanks is a genuine, real, good man, too.
Well, Gavin Edwards wrote a book about Tom Hanks, too, Steve.
That is very true. This movie, again, goes to the heart of who Fred Rogers was without being the story of Fred Rogers. My favorite moment was in a Hollywood movie in 2019, they used silence for a full minute, just like Fred Rogers did.
Was it a full minute?
It was a full minute.
Oh, my goodness.
It was a full 60 seconds of silence. The Foley artists on this movie, with the ticking clocks and the sounds of crickets, was a stunning moment for me watching this movie.
I would say 60 out of 100.
I would go 80 at least on the chip scale.
All right, Steve, you got to see something from a different world.
Yes, I went to go see Never Surrender. This is a Galaxy Quest documentary. This is the 20th anniversary of the movie Galaxy Quest. I love the movie Galaxy Quest. It is one of my favorite movies of all time.
How can you not love this film?
This is an almost perfect movie. In fact, that's what opens the documentary, is on the screen there is a quote from David Mamet, who is one of the most marvelous playwrights of all time, and he lists Galaxy Quest on his list of the five perfect movies that have ever been made. Galaxy Quest is amazing.
Well, this movie, Galaxy Quest, as far as the movie, not the movie about the movie, very similar to, I would say, A Princess Bride, sort of exploring its genre, a beautiful homage to a genre. And I mean, Galaxy Quest certainly has its cult following right now. I ended up watching Galaxy Quest.
Again.
Well, of course I did. And, the show must go on.
Yeah.
Damn you.
The Galaxy Quest story is the story of us. It's the story of us fans who go to conventions and love a particular movie or TV show, and we want to honor that memory and be those fans and show those stars how much we love them.
Kind of like that, something in Anaheim next year, a celebration of a certain movie?
Yes, just like Star Wars Celebration for Anaheim. Yeah, remember how much fun we had at Chicago Star Wars Celebration?
Well, the Force was with us,
too. Yes. The Galaxy Quest is that story, then, where the fans become the heroes. They are the ones who save the day. It is so well layered with all of the action of a Star Trek episode, all of the meta fun of the idea of William Shatner or somebody just like him being in this situation, and that idea of finding yourself, your fandom, and finding a way to be a part of all of this. This documentary is fantastic. I really recommend that you find a way to watch this. It hasn't been announced yet, but it will be released on home video at some point.
I hope so. One of the things that we talked to in a little preparation for this was Harold Ramis was part of this project as far as Galaxy Quest. How did the movie change from Ramis's vision to what the vision we got?
Yeah, this was a Harold Ramis story from beginning from the very beginning. This was his movie to direct.
And for those who don't know who he is,
Harold Ramis was the guy who wrote Ghostbusters. He was the one who wrote Meatballs and Stripes, all of those Bill Murray movies, and he was a brilliant writer coming out of Second City, and he had a vision for this idea of the screwball Star Trek.
The Bill Murray Star Trek?
Uh-huh. It would have been a very different movie had Bill Murray starred in Galaxy Quest. But the studio decided that Tim Allen was the right choice for the captain in Galaxy Quest. And Harold Ramis bowed out. He said, I can't make this movie with this star. I don't think it's the right person for the part. So Harold Ramis left.
He was so wrong.
He was very wrong, but it would have been a different movie.
Sure.
If
sure.
Harold Ramis had directed this instead of the guy that they found that had a very, very short resume before Galaxy Quest, it would have been a very different movie and maybe wouldn't have been as wonderful as it was. The way that this movie is put together is almost perfect. This documentary is a great example of those documentaries that I like. A beginning, a middle, and an end. There's a storyline to this documentary of how this movie was made. My mother, who loves Galaxy Quest, it might be maybe her top five favorite movies of all time.
Steve's mother, top five.
She loves Galaxy Quest. I brought her to this documentary. I brought my eighth grader, who has never seen Galaxy Quest, and all three of us enjoyed the storytelling of this documentary.
Never give up. Never surrender.
This is a true documentary. I recommend we find it. If you want more information, the director of this documentary was interviewed on the CF3 podcast. I'll put that in the show notes so that you can get back to that. They had a great conversation about stardom, about fandom, and about the line between when we love something.
It was a good movie.
There's so many great stories. There's so many great stories that I don't want to tell in this short podcast, but I recommend that you see this movie. I also got to see one of my favorite, probably one of my top five movies of all time, The Jerk from 1979, the Steve Martin silly comedy. It is reaching its 40th anniversary this week.
Were you writing a lot of checks at the end, Steve?
And 9 cents! I can do every line from this movie. I have recited every line from this movie. This is a movie about racism and how stupid racism looks. How dumb an idea of separating us from them looks. And Steve Martin was able to put on screen a guy who...
He's going to take this, Steve. He's got a whole list of things he's going to take. Just this.
I don't need you. I don't need anything. That's one of the lines that I say in this house all the time. Steve Martin plays this guy who is not self-aware. He is not a smart man.
But that was his her stage persona on his comedy tour.
Right.
As... I'm the comedian up here playing the comedian, and you're the audience, and you are to laugh at me.
Right.
And I will not be aware of really what I'm doing.
Correct. Putting that into this story where this guy finds a way to be famous, finds a way to be successful, and is still very not aware of himself.
Well, his girlfriend was Bernadette Peters, Steve. Obviously, he was attracted to somebody.
There's no doubt that there are lots of people in the world.
He wrote a song about it, Steve.
And lots... I'm not going to sing any of the songs from The Jerk right now. This is one of my favorite movies. I recommend it. It does hold up very well after 40 years, just like Galaxy Quest holds up really well after 20 years. The Jerk is one of those pivotal movies in my lifetime. You got to see some movies this week. You got to see Frozen 2.
I got to see Frozen 2, and my daughters, who are high schoolers now, I took them to see Frozen, actually to a preview showing of that when the first one came out. And as I was like leaving, I was going, this is like half a musical. We got in the car and my youngest daughter, who was very young at the time, belted out the songs. She knew the songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you have a young person in your life that saw Frozen, they all became Broadway stars real quick. Yeah. Every one of those kids did. So I got to see it with my daughters, and they wanted to take their grandmother.
Okay.
And I got to see it with my cousin, who was in third grade.
Perfect.
And there was a packed house with all young kids. And my high schooler was next to me giggling, and the third grader was giggling. And all the kids who were in the place were giggling, and they were absolutely enjoying themselves. So this is not as great as the first one. Doesn't need to be. This is certainly a family film that everyone enjoyed, especially the third grader who kept telling me that she was not into Disney princesses.
Oh, okay.
But as she was absolutely eating up this movie. Great songs. I've listened to the soundtrack probably 3 or 4 times.
Okay.
I was driving. And there are some very good songs. And obviously, Olaf is just as clueless as can be.
Yeah.
So Josh Gad does a great job.
Fantastic. Good. So you recommend this one?
Oh, yeah. I would say this is 75 out of 100.
One of my favorite tweets this week was somebody said, well, in my day, Frozen 2 would have been a straight-to-VHS release, and Olaf's voice would have been weird.
That's right. Of course.
Right?
Of course.
It does have that sequelitis to it, but it's still worth your time.
Well, it's a story, and you know, there's just so much Disney stuff going on right now.
Really?
There's a Disney way of looking at things. Uh-huh. I think that we're going to get some backlash of that.
Okay. You got to see a couple of documentaries this week all about the space program. The first one is Apollo 11.
Now, this was released earlier this year. I've wanted to see it. This is a wonderful documentary about the space race and about us landing on the moon, or say us, the United States landing on the moon. And how that worked. And really sparked a nice conversation. I was with my mom, and we called my father, and we were talking a little bit about their life, because they were the young people at that time who got to see it live. So mm-hmm. my parents were overseas. My father was stationed in the military. And they were sort of the representative of the village that where they were, of the Americans. So people would come and shake their hands and all sorts of stuff.
Wow.
And they watched it on a snowy TV. Now, this documentary does not have a host kind of introducing what's going on.
This is so interesting. How does this story play out then?
It kind of moves from recording to recording. There's interviews going on. But, you know, there's people talking about what the feeling was at the time, how they were looking at it. They was talking about the astronauts, about the people on the ground, the wives, and stuff like that. I really, really enjoyed this. I would say this is 85 out of 100.
Wow.
And for a person who has interest and doesn't really know the impact that something as spectacular as landing on the moon and coming back to Earth was, this is really a great place to start, which leads us right into the next documentary I saw to pair this with.
Yeah, that one is Armstrong. This is the story specifically of Neil Armstrong, the first man on the moon.
Now, this one interviews his family, his wife, and then people who knew him. So Armstrong, which I didn't know all. This is my week of space stuff. But anyway, he was a pilot for the Navy. Mm-hmm. And he was very, very cool under a lot of stress. This is the reason why he was chosen to be the person to step on the moon. He was also the person why he was chosen to be on this mission. So he, and he also, when they land back on Earth, became the voice of the astronauts. So as they went on, ultimately this rock and roll tour of the world, that Chicago had a great big parade for them, he was the person who spoke. And he, you know, is very Midwestern, certainly very modest, mm-hmm. and a person who is like, well, you know, I did my duty, and now I want to go back to regular life. But you can't be a regular person when you're the Beatles.
Right.
And that's exactly what these guys were. They were the Beatles. And he had a lot of pressure on him. He handled it as well as any person could.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, he wound up as a professor at the University of Cincinnati. And if you wanted to come talk to him about landing on the moon and stepping on the moon, I guess you could. But you know, he just wanted to go back into like a public life. what I also got is that because of all the stresses that were going on, that his wife later on, I learned they divorced, which is not uncommon for a lot of military people.
Sure.
And it's not uncommon for astronauts. You know, it's very difficult dealing with all the pressure of this. Armstrong's a very quiet, he's like the quiet thinker, a very deep type of person, prepared, probably wasn't as open with his emotions. He certainly, Mr. Rogers could have worked with him a little bit. And this this made him a great pilot, probably made him a great person in the military, made him a good face of the astronauts, but you know, obviously could make it a very challenging partner for his spouse. And eventually they chose to split up. She certainly had very nice things to say about him. He is a he truly is one of the modern heroes of the world, and I recommend this too. I would say this is 75 out of 100.
Wow. You got to see the documentary Inside Lehman Brothers. This one doesn't quite have the same happy ending as the space documentaries.
No, it seems to be still playing out today.
Yeah.
This is a documentary about Lehman Brothers. For those of you who do not know Lehman Brothers, it is a financial institution that went bankrupt during the financial meltdown, the depression we experienced in 2007-2008. This is the story of incredible greed, short-sightedness. It's about the rank-and-file employees who got really, really hurt during this, how they still are being impacted by this, the whistleblowers are. You know, where it really didn't address is the general public on how they were impacted. We've got housing communities and stuff like that that were around us that, you know, were impacted. School systems were impacted. It rifled through our entire life. And Lehman Brothers, along with all the other bank institutions, Chase or Bank of America, any number of those firms at the time, they all were dealing with similar but different situations. And this is very enlightening. If you want to learn a little bit about what was going on during that time, I have read lots of books and lots of papers on this. This would be a nice match if you read Michael Lewis's The Big Short or you watched the movie The Big Short. Mm-hmm. You could learn a little bit about this from another point of view. I think this story is still unfolding. I find this fascinating. This is probably 70 out of 100.
Okay. And then another documentary, must have been documentary week for you. You got to see the PBS four-part series, College Behind Bars.
Yes, this is a fascinating series. This is on PBS. If you have the PBS app, you can just pull it up and you can watch it. It's a four-part series. Ken Burns was the producer of this. And this is about Bard College, about their program to teach liberal arts college students who are incarcerated. So we currently have about 2.1 million inmates in the United States. I mean, it certainly is a shame on the world that we have this many people.
More than in other countries.
Any other country.
Yeah.
Any other country. Ultimately, we have about 12,000 of those going to college, and just a percentage of those are going to Bard College, and that's where our documentary takes place. We're getting interviews with the inmates, the teachers, and about the program, and what brought this program around. And you get a full understanding the power of college, or the power of learning to think. Mm-hmm. And why liberal arts colleges are powerful. So Bard College is a small liberal arts college, very good college, and they were able to come in, and the inmates basically apply to be part of this program. And while they're in prison, they're being taught the classics. They go through to get an associate's degree and then a bachelor's degree. They've got all the stresses of being in prison as part of this, so we get to learn a little bit about that. If you get in trouble or something, you're not part of the program. Mm-hmm. You get a really understanding where they came from. And so many of these, almost all of them are minorities. They all have stories to tell. You know, some of them have addictions. Some of them just made bad decisions. And some of them, when they had the opportunity, when they were in regular school, like K through 12 type schools, they just they just weren't mature about this. Mm-hmm. You ultimately are going to be asking a bunch of questions as you watch this. And one is, because of the limitations that they have, they really don't have access to computers like you and I have. So they have to order paper books. They mm-hmm. have stacks of books. They write out their work by hand. They have to read the materials. I mean, they're taking real college classes. These are the same classes they take over at Bard. And you're going to say, well, what if I got rid of the technology out of the classroom? The other part is while they certainly, we have interviews with men and women, you know, because of how they're housed, it's an all men's school mm-hmm. and then an all women's school. You know, should sexes be divided? Do they create a distraction to the study? I don't know, but that's a question you could leave this and ask. The beautiful part of this is that you can see how the freshmen are coming in, the mm-hmm. first years, and you know they come in with whatever language that they're speaking at the time, which is may or may not be, I guess, modern English as we would want to speak, and you see how their minds change. By the time they're seniors, they truly have thought, been taught to think. And their use of words, their use of language reflects their understanding of their place in the world. Hmm. You cannot leave this series and just not have your heart open up to these guys. Now, I want to share a scene with you. I think it's on the third episode where there's a lady, she's in prison. And she's going to be released a couple weeks from now, so on a Friday. And she's graduating from Bard College, like the Wednesday before. And her mom is really, really angry at her. So, you know, as a prisoner, you have to sit at the table. You can't stand up. You can't show extreme emotions because at that point you're being upset and you may be taken out of the room. Mm-hmm. But this is visitation day. And the mom is really, really angry. And she's angry as a person could understand. They're like, well, why does my daughter, who's in prison, get a college education when I've got to go pay for, or my kids who are outside prison have to pay for it?
Right.
So that's a valid reason. I mean, you can see, understand why a parent could be very angry about that. At the same time, the mom was just not going to give in. She was saying, well, you know, I don't travel during the week. And the inmate is saying, please, mom,
I'm proud of what I've been able to accomplish. I want you to be there.
Yeah. I would like you to be there to celebrate this accomplishment I have. Mm-hmm. And the mom's just not going to give in. She's angry. She's really, really angry. And she's like, well, you know, I'm not, why should I come to this? You're the one who's in prison. You're just throwing this back in her face. And that's one of the real challenges that we're dealing with, because what a person was mm-hmm. as a first year
yeah.
and what they turn out to be as a senior, this is they've had a transformation. They came in as caterpillars. They're leaving as butterflies. Mm-hmm. But really, so they've had this transformation, but the mom is still looking at the child
yeah.
who is an adult as they were, not what they've become.
Mm-hmm.
And you could just see the heart being ripped from her. You could see her, the mother, looking at her child as this this pariah on society.
Right.
And that's the real challenge that these inmates, when they're released, the statistics are not good. I want to say, I'm going from memory, 47% wind up back in prison within the year.
Hmm.
There's a quote from Barack Obama in there that $81 million a year, no, $81 billion is being spent on incarceration.
Wow.
So it's so much money.
Mm-hmm.
When they get out, they really struggle, like every inmate does, trying to find jobs, trying to find their way. So are you rehabilitated by going to prison? Are you there to be punished and not do anything? And boy, there's just so much that you can glean from this. This is on the PBS app, streaming now. This is an important series. I think that, you know, if you have interest in this, I think it will change how you look at the world.
Mm.
So fascinating, fascinating, good stuff. I would say 75 out of 100.
Okay. opening this week, there's some movies. Hopefully they are just as good as your 75s that you gave to a lot of those documentaries this week. We've got Jumanji The Next Level, the sequel to the remake movie of Jumanji. I look forward to this one.
Oh, this looks great. If you watched the first Jumanji, you got to see a fun game mm-hmm. being played. And this one looks equally as family-oriented fun.
Probably a lot of fart jokes like the first movie, but that's okay. This one, they switch it up a little bit. The players who are operating the avatars are different. So the same actors from the last Jumanji movie are now different personas. Danny DeVito is one of the personas. The Rock is doing his Danny DeVito impression, and Danny Glover is the other one, and we've got Kevin Hart doing his Danny Glover impression. I look forward to this movie.
This looks great.
The second one this week is Richard Jewell. This is the real story of an American security guard who was accused of planting a bomb in the 1996 Olympics.
Yeah, this took place in Atlanta, and this was, I've forgotten about this story. Mm-hmm. So Clint Eastwood is our director on this. If I had, I'm going to go to a film this week. This will be the film that I will end up seeing. And this is about a gentleman who certainly wanted to be in the police, law enforcement, wanted to probably be in the military, wasn't physically able to do it, but was working as security at the Olympics, discovered the bomb, mm-hmm. and then was accused of planting that bomb. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, this is the story about how the government agencies forced that upon him.
Hmm.
So this looks like just a fascinating story. I look forward to seeing this.
The next one is called A Hidden Life. This is the story of a family, a conscientious objector who does not want to be a part of the Nazi part of his country in World War II. So he goes and tries to live a quiet life, and they take him and put him into prison for not being a part of their military.
Yeah, the conscientious objector is, I'm not fighting on principle. Mm-hmm. I'm not a violent person, and I will not participate in violence. Many times you're either forced to or you go to prison. He went to prison, mm-hmm. and this is the story of that. It's certainly, while it's not a Sony classic, Steve, it looks like a Sony classic.
It's got a pacing to it. There's a lot of thinking that goes into that movie, A Hidden Life. There's a movie called Seberg. This is the real-life story of a French New Wave icon who, in the late 60s, was targeted by Hoover's FBI because of her political and romantic involvement in civil rights activism. And
this stars the new Captain America. Steve, uh-huh. The Falcon.
And Kristen Stewart doing her French not talking and line.
Do they have Totino's, Steve?
Totino's pizza rolls are featured. I don't know what to think about this one. I have no interest in Seberg. There is a movie called The Death and Life of John F. Donovan. This is a strange story of fandom and a television star and a young kid who really looks up to him.
The stars Jon Snow.
Okay. I still don't know anything about the Game of Thrones. So
winter is coming, Steve.
Winter is coming. This is an interesting one. There's a movie called Code 8. This is a not exactly the X-Men, but there are mutants who are out there hiding and people who want to get them and put them away.
Well, very similar to maybe Brightburn that came out earlier this year, mm-hmm. where we had a Superman story that wasn't about Superman.
Yeah.
This is a world where we have people with powers, mutants, and they are sort of the underclass. So they're taught to suppress and not show their powers. And then, of course, someone introduces them and shows them that they should use their powers. Well, this is along that lines. We'll see how it plays out. This interesting, maybe-ish.
It certainly has nothing to do with our society and the separation of who has the power and who doesn't, huh?
Well, maybe the gifts. Maybe using your gifts. Steve, you got a horror film for me?
Yes. Black Christmas is the latest Blumhouse horror movie. Those of you who love your horror movies, I bet you're going to love Black Christmas.
Steve, are they going to have any... Does anybody really have college during the Christmas season?
I don't
think so.
No.
This takes place right before Christmas break on a college campus, and the sororities and the fraternities have parties, and there's death around them.
Yeah, it looks like a pretty standard fare horror movie to me.
Book it.
Brings us to our book of the week. You know, it is December 10th. That means next week, Chip. Next week is Star Wars week.
Star Wars, Steve. There's going to be a Star Wars something coming out next week.
Star Wars, Chip. Star Wars.
Is it going to have Baby Yoda?
I don't know. I hope so. I am so excited about the new episode of Star Wars that's coming out next week. I'm so excited that I'm reading as much Star Wars as I can.
Well, Steve, let's just say that you went to a planet and you wanted to be a hermit. Is there a book that we possibly could read that may not be part of canon anymore?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not a part of the canon because it's now one of those Legends books. But John Jackson Miller wrote the book Kenobi in 2014.
Was he the chosen one, Steve?
John Jackson Miller was the one chosen to write the book, yes. This was a story that people have been thinking about for a long time. For the last 40 years, we've thought about what was Obi-Wan Kenobi doing in the desert in those 20 years between when he took Luke to his uncle and then the events of A New Hope started.
Is this like maybe old Ben? I don't know an Obi-Wan.
I haven't heard that name in a very long time. Yes, Ben Kenobi walking around the desert in Tatooine being...
Full robe. Lots of robes,
full
Steve.
Full Jedi robes, which is interesting, but being as hermity as he can, not trying to draw any attention to himself, keeping in the shadows,
not making noises and scaring off the scan people, is he?
Well, in John Jackson Miller's story, there is communication with the sand people. They actually have conversations, and the sand people have conversations amongst themselves that are translated into Basic for us so that we can understand the sand people better.
What do we know about the sand people, Steve? That's not canon.
Well, they have a society. They are people. They are humans. Well, some form of humanoid that are living on Tatooine, and they are striving for the same things that we're striving for. They are trying to survive in this desert just as much as everybody else, and we get to see from their perspective why they do some of the things that they do in Star Wars instead of them just being these monsters that live in the desert. The story of Kenobi centers on Ben Kenobi and how he helps the people of Tatooine who are in need. He is the protector of at least one family. It's a Western. It is a pretty standard, hey, there's a lady who runs a farm.
A lady.
And she is in need, and she has a young daughter, and Ben Kenobi strides into town.
Old quiet man
from a certain point of view, and he helps them out. There is a potential romantic entanglement there, but Ben Kenobi, being a Jedi, he is not interested in romance.
He didn't spend any time with Lando to learn the tricks.
Have you read all the stuff this week from Billy Dee Williams?
Oh, yes.
And how he said something that he maybe didn't understand.
Of course he did.
And the internet ran with it, and he's like, what are you even talking about?
He's like 75 years old or so. Right. And he's like,
I don't even know what you're talking about.
I'm in touch with my feminine side, Steve.
I'm very happy to be a happy person everywhere I go. That was about all he said. And the internet went, we know something about Billy Dee Williams. Anyway. Back to progressive. Right. Back to Kenobi. This story, this is really good writing. This is a really good Western in that Star Wars universe with all of the character development. This would make a great movie. This could very easily be the storyline for the upcoming Disney Plus Obi-Wan Kenobi series.
And that of course, stars... Ewan McGregor.
Yeah, Ewan McGregor has signed on officially for the upcoming series on Disney+. It's going to be on on Disney Plus in 2021. They're starting filming soon, and we will see it in about a year. But they were planning this years ago.
What do you mean, Steve?
Ewan McGregor has given interview after interview after interview for the last 3 years saying, no, 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 there is no Obi-Wan Kenobi movie. I am not working on this. It will not happen. He was lying to us.
Well, Steve, was it really lying? Was it really lying?
Yes, it was really lying because they've really been working on this for a long time. This was supposed to be...
Steve, what you learn in life is that many of the truths we hold...
From a certain point of view, it was not a lie.
That's right. Of course. He really was dead, Steve. Your father. From a certain point of view, your father was
dead. Your father was dead, and was, after I threw him into a volcano.
That's right. That's right. You were the chosen one, Steve. You were the chosen one.
Ewan McGregor has been working on this for a long time. It was supposed to be a standalone movie, but after the Solo and Rogue One movies really didn't do well in the box office as well as they wanted to, they've decided that this might be a better story to tell over a longer period, a six-hour, like the Mandalorian story.
Will it have a Baby Yoda?
Oh my god, the Baby Yoda. Oh, the Baby Yoda stuff is so adorable. I want a Baby Yoda so bad. Did you see on Facebook where I put the crochet version of the Baby Yoda? You can make your own Baby Yoda. And then Disney took down the pattern like 24 hours later. Like, I almost had a Baby Yoda. Yes, The Mandalorian is a special kind of Star Wars. We're going to talk about that in a couple of weeks, so let's not talk about Mandalorian too much, but it's really good Star Wars.
That's a Western, too.
It is definitely a Western. The music... Okay, we're not talking about that. Kenobi is a really good book. It's a Western set in the Star Wars universe. John Jackson Miller, thank you for this story.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. You know how wonderful the internet is, Chip? It's full of so many great ideas. So much education can happen on the internet. And then you can look and find stuff, too.
Well, on Instagram, there seems to be a strategy, Steve, on how to get more sun. Because, the winter is here, Steve.
It is winter, and vitamin D is a big problem. We have a deficiency of vitamin D, especially in this part of the world where we don't see the sun for so long.
So from the internet who gave us a place where we should steam our nethers, we've learned that we want to get sun in the place that the sun doesn't shine, Steve.
The idea of exposing your parts to the sun.
Not your parts, your
go ahead.
No, that place, that's that's the exit place, Steve. All right, so let's just say that the internet was the internet, and it never fails to fascinate us. And we have, there's pictures, Steve. There's not like,
yes,
pictures that are true. There's people out there who need to expose their place where the sun doesn't shine to get more vitamin D, Steve. And they're saying that is a strategy on how to live a happier life.
Yeah, but one of the things on the article that you posted says the doctors don't think that this is a good idea.
Well, Steve, what does the doctor have to say when the internet is so important?
Oh, my goodness.
So anyway,
check your vitamin D levels. That's all I'm saying.
I'm just saying that there is a newspaper report that you can click on. And
newspaper?
You can,
this is a newspaper.
A tabloid, Steve.
It's New York Post. Okay, that works.
A tabloid.
Okay.
And it's based off an Instagram group that's making the same suggestion. So let's just say that we all probably should go to a warm area. It's too bad up here. It's so cold. We won't be able to try this till later on in the summer. But maybe we'll have more data points.
I'm not pointing to it. Not even the data.
But.
This week we did hear some sad news. Netflix has officially canceled the new series of Mystery Science Theater 3000. So once again, the community is going to have to come together and find a new home for our favorite Cowtown puppet show.
Isn't Thanksgiving week the perfect time to make that announcement?
It was right before Turkey Day that they made that announcement.
Why would that be the timing? Why not go ahead and celebrate it and come out later?
Ruined my Turkey Day.
Well, there you go. Well, at least you got to watch some Mystery Science Theater.
Uh-huh.
And it's still available, isn't it?
It's still available. We're still circulating the tapes and the URLs. We still have all of the episodes that we have, and hopefully Joel will find a new home again for Mystery Science Theater.
Well, Steve, last Black Friday, you and probably a bunch of our listeners made a pilgrimage of sorts down to the Grand Village of Lombard.
Yes, the 20th annual Chicago TARDIS Doctor Who convention was once again the weekend after Thanksgiving, and boy, did we have fun. We enjoyed each other's company. We talked to so many great people. Arthur Darville, who plays Rory, was a great guest this year. We had two doctors, Sylvester McCoy, who is always fun to listen to, and Paul McGann, the Eighth Doctor, he really is going to be one of the historical doctors now that he has so many opportunities in the audio arena with Big Finish. He is making stories, and those stories allow the Doctor to live on. And we had so much fun talking with everybody. We met so many listeners there, and we hope you had some fun.
Well, and for those who have never attended this seems to be the perfect size mm-hmm. of a convention. It's big enough that you can attract a whole bunch of stuff,
right.
but not so overpowering that you can't meet them.
Right.
And that there's the beauty of it, is you can meet people who've worked on the property.
And we have this community, this family of people. This is our family reunion. We see each other once a year, and we get together to enjoy each other's company and to talk about this thing that we love. A little bit of a breaking news headline.
What?
Christopher Jones, who is the comic artist who has had so many successes, he has moved from his Midwestern home to Los Angeles this week to continue his career in comic book and cartoon drawing, and he won't be around for the conventions for a while because he's going to be doing some work that will be very, very important to us in the future.
Doctor Who important?
Doctor Who and Star Trek and Star Wars and Young Justice is the one project that brought him out there. You might remember he did all the Svengoolie meets DC pages.
I remember DC Comics moved from New York to Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So we've got some things to talk about with Christopher Jones coming up.
Well, he must suffer during the winter time in that warm environment. Steve, how can he live properly?
I don't know. But we can still visit. We can come back. The tickets are now on sale for the 2020 Chicago TARDIS Convention. That's coming up November 27th through 29th, 2020. It's so hard to say. It's so weird to think of 2020.
It's almost like we have kids who are graduating, Steve.
It's like we have vision. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. It's Star Wars week. That's all we're going to talk about next week is Star Wars and Baby Yodas. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Evergreen, the Christmas tree. I can't wait to take these balls off. They weigh me down, Steve.
We'll see you in the future.